23rd through the 28th.
Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. 35 years ago, Martin Luther King told Southern Christian leaders that discrimination is a hellhound that gnaws at Negroes in every waking moment of their lives, to remind them that the lie of their inferiority is accepted as truth in the society dominating them. And while the discrimination Dr. King spoke of is still a part of America, there is certainly a sense that much has changed in the past 35 years, not though as much as we might have thought. A recent study of resumes shows that even professional human resource departments routinely give preference to job applications from people with white-sounding names. The message that in the employment lineup it's better to be Tim than Tyrone, better to be Tracy than Tamika. Connection listeners, does this study confirm what you already knew? Or do you think there has been an improvement in American hiring practices? More to the point, what can be done to get rid of the discrimination that's still there? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. And joining us today, Sendil Malinathan. He's a professor of economics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and co-author of the recent study. I'm also joined by Preston Edwards. He's the chief executive officer of IAM Diversity, Inc. It's a company devoted to promoting diversity in the workplace. He's joining us from a studio in New Orleans. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Preston, I'll get you to just sit tight for a minute. I want Sendil to take us through the details of this study. Now, Sendil, you sent out 5,000 resumes to begin with?
Yes, we sent. We responded to about 1,250 ads, so it was actually quite a bit of ads in Boston and Chicago, and each ad got 4 resumes.
And they were split half and half of the 5,000, half had these so-called white-sounding names?
Right, exactly, half had. And actually, it's an interesting story why we sent out 5,000. We started the study thinking there's going to be some effect, we thought, but we thought it'd be a fairly moderate or small effect, and when you have a small effect, you need large number of data points to get at the effect. So in fact, we didn't even look at the data for about a year because we felt, well, what's the point of looking at data when there's nothing conclusive yet? And then when we went back, so by then we had sent about 5,000, we went back and looked at it, we were amazed that in any week or 2 weeks you could already see the effect because it was so large.
Why did you do this? Were you checking to see whether or not the discrimination is still a part of workplace practices?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think what we had looked at just data on earnings of African Americans and earnings of whites, and in the raw data, you can see there's a gap. And there are two ways to think about that gap. One way is that that's evidence of discrimination. But another equally plausible way is we know African Americans are disadvantaged in where they live. We know that they're disadvantaged in the kind of schooling they receive, the opportunities they have. And perhaps that's all this is. If you take any group that's disadvantaged, even if employers aren't discriminating against them, of course they won't get as nice jobs. They won't get as high wages. And so we wanted to figure out, is this really an effect of the race, or is this an effect of even with the same skills there would be a gap? Or is this just something about background?
And what kind of jobs were you sending these mythical resumes to? Were they high-tech jobs? What kind of jobs?
So what we were looking for was categories of jobs that had enormous spread. So we chose administrative-type jobs and sales-type jobs. So what that meant was everything from clerk or mailroom worker all the way up to a cashier. That would be the low end, the low pay in the job distribution, all the way up to regional manager or assistant to the president of a company. So there was enormous spread in the kind of jobs that we responded to.
And did you see a distinction from the top to the bottom in that spread?
We really expected to, but there was no difference at all. There was as much discrimination, and this surprised me, there was as much discrimination for the cashier-like jobs as there was in the jobs that were assistant to the executive, you know, the president.
What kind of names were you using? How could you be scientific about that?
Yeah, that was one of the design challenges we faced. We didn't want to just come up with names. So what we did was we went and got birth records, and we used frequency. So for each name, we collected data on how common they were amongst whites by the birth records and how common they were amongst African Americans. And then what we did is, so therefore we could find out which names were very common amongst African Americans, but relatively uncommon amongst whites, and we call those distinctive. And that's how we came up with names such as Tamika and Tyrone. And one of the surprises to me, at least, was those were very common names amongst African Americans. Tamika is a really common name. It's not exotic in any way. It's not a strange name. It's something that a lot of African Americans name their children.
And do you know now, based on the word that you got back from all the people who would have been doing the hiring, whether or not you were dealing principally with executives trained in human resources, or were there many cases where you're simply dealing with a company president with five people in the company who, doesn't have any professional training in that?
Right. Now, one of the things we knew about the companies, actually, based on their name, we tried to match back the size of the company. So, in fact, we could already see the difference in our data, whether there was any between the very small companies, where, like you said, it would just be an individual, or a very large company where there might be a trained human resource manager. And again, we found no difference between the two.
That must have surprised you a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, that was very surprising. There was a lot of the study that surprised me. I mean, people tell me, oh, I guess I knew there'd be a gap. But if you really introspect, 50% is a very, very large number. I mean, to put that in perspective, that would mean if both African-Americans and whites if an African-American and a white get unemployed at the same time and they send out the same number of resumes, 50% would mean if one is unemployed for 6 weeks, the other is unemployed for a whole 3 weeks more, right? So that's a whole three extra weeks of unemployment, and that is just an enormous gap in terms of ability to get a job and ability to survive, really.
Let's turn to Preston Edwards, who's joining us from a studio in New Orleans. Preston, are you at all surprised by the results of the study that we're talking about?
Not at all, Dick. This is something that I have suspected, and I'm really pleased that this study came out to prove that discrimination continued to exist in the year 2000, when so many people, particularly non-minorities, believe that we have a colorblind society and believe that there's no more discrimination. And they look around the workplace and they see the absence of minorities, and they believe the absence of minorities is because they just don't qualify, or you just can't find them. But they're not there because discrimination is alive and well in 2003.
Does the study then give you some kind of scientific proof then of something you had, as you said, were just suspecting till now?
Yes, considering the fact that the study came out of the University of Chicago and MIT brings a great deal of credibility with it that can't be challenged.
And
if I had said that, it could be challenged. If I had said this is what I think, someone would challenge me. I don't think that anyone can challenge this study.
So something of a wake-up call.
It is definitely a wake-up call. And I think that it's an opportunity for the CEOs and the people at the top of major corporations to take a good look at the reason that they are not as diverse as they should be. And I believe that they need to put into those positions minorities who will give consideration, proper consideration beyond the name, to all applicants. And companies have said, when they're giving lip service to this, that they want a diverse workforce because they want to be more competitive.
Mm-hmm.
They're not making it happen within their company. And they're not checking to see what's wrong. This is proof that they're not checking to see if their HR and recruiting systems are working properly. What they're saying is, we just can't find them, but they haven't dug deeper. Now, when they try to figure out what's the problem with sales, they'll dig deeper. But when they're trying to figure this out, they just take what's on the surface.
Yeah, if I may say, before, when we were constructing this study, we heard exactly what Preston was saying. A lot of HR managers said, oh, you'll definitely find a gap. It'll be a reverse discrimination gap, because I work very hard to find African-American applicants all the time. But then they go on to say, I just don't get enough qualified applicants. And I think there's something, like you're saying, there's this, while there may be this conscious attempt, subconsciously, there's something else going on that's hindering this process. And I think a lot of them don't realize, and partly it's probably not digging deeper, like you're saying.
Now, just to be precise here, the applications that you sent out had, whether or not it was under a name, Timothy or Tamika or whatever, would have had exactly the same qualifications?
Oh, exactly the same. In fact, because we're sending to many employers, the same application sometimes gets Tamika and sometimes gets Brendan. So, in fact, there's literally no difference between the applications.
So you're saying that the rejection's happening even before anybody looks below the name.
Right. So that was one of the most surprising things we found was we actually designed the study to see to examine how much credentials mattered on the resume. So what we did was, I said we sent out four resumes to each ad. And what we did was, we created two of the resumes to be better than the other two, to have less holes in the employment, for example, so that, you know, it looks like a continuous progression or volunteer activity, things that employers like. And then we made one of the good ones be African-American, one of the good ones be white at random. And what we were interested in is, how much do these extra credentials actually help African-Americans, and how much do they help the white names? And what we found was they helped the white names moderately. So the better credentials meant 30% higher callbacks. But what was extremely surprising to us was they didn't help the African-American names much at all. In fact, in the data, it looked like it doesn't help one bit. So the gap is actually higher when there are more credentials. So the thing that you said, which is perhaps they don't look past the name, that's one explanation of what we're finding. Or perhaps they look past the name and they discount the skills when it belongs to Tamika, but they don't discount it when it belongs to Brendan. We can't conclusively say why that's happening, but mm-hmm. It certainly seems to be the case that this credentials alone aren't going to solve this problem. It's not like skilling up and giving a lot of training and subsidizing is going to somehow close the gap in some easy way.
Preston, I'm glad you did it that way, because it really shows that people are really being screened out as opposed to being screened in. And those employers who are trying to recruit a diverse workforce have a commitment to screen in. So if they see people with all of the credentials, then that says that they need to bring them in to interview them before they make a decision as to whether or not they're not qualified. You want to, when you're trying to build a diverse workforce, you want to screen people in, not screen them out. They're looking at a name, they see the name, and then they trash the resume. And that's extremely, that's discrimination, it is dangerous, and people at the top of companies need to know that they're now vulnerable.
But is there a fix for this, Preston?
The fix is to do what they suggested 30 years ago. The fix is, on one hand, affirmative action. On the other hand, the CEO, the person from the top, doing a complete audit themselves before the EEOC or the FCCP comes in to do the audit to find out what's broken, where it's broke, and how to fix it.
Do you mean quotas?
To fix it. Excuse me?
Do you mean quotas, setting quotas?
Well, I like to call them goals.
Yeah.
I think companies and people in affirmative action and people who really don't want affirmative action to work, they speak in terms of quotas.
Right.
You know, quotas is a bad word when goals is a good word.
That's why I was going to ask you about the difference.
Okay. Companies have goals to achieve a 10% growth in earnings for next year. They don't have a quota to achieve 10% growth for next year. They call it a goal. So when you want to do something positive, you call it a goal. Okay. So I want to put that name on it, that they should have goals. And it's reasonable to expect that when you want to increase something, you set a goal. So if you have an underrepresentation of minorities in your workforce, what do you want that representation to look like in the future? A year from now, 6 months from now, 5 years from now? You want to grow 10%. That is your goal, and your people will do whatever is necessary to achieve that goal, and then you're going to reward them for achieving that goal.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Do the goals need to be set, redefined? What's it going to take to erase discrimination in hiring practices in America? 1-800-423-TALK. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is W.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour, talk about the way that people are hired in this country. In a recent study from MIT, University of Chicago, which shows that in many instances, the human resource manager is simply taking a look at the name on the application and favoring those with white-sounding names over those with African-American-sounding names. With me in the studio, Sandal Malainathan. He's professor of economics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And joining us from a studio in New Orleans, Preston Edwards. He's CEO of IM Diversity, Inc. And, Sandal, let me just start with you, because the idea that Preston's talking about, setting goals, making those clear, is that the easy way, or not easy, there's nothing easy about this, but is that the intelligent way to correct this?
So I would actually, well, I think as part of this study, I've learned two things that speak to what we can do about it. One is that when the study came out, I had expected a lot of negative responses from human resource managers telling us, you know, there's something wrong with what you're doing, or I don't believe it, or things like that. In fact, what we got was very positive responses from human resource managers, and several had told us, I know I might be doing this, but I'm not really sure how not to, in the sense that I think the goals are there. But I think the second thing that Preston was saying, which is taking proactive efforts mm-hmm. to implement the goals, is what's sort of missing. I think these things, at least talking to these human resource managers, now we move beyond the scientific here, I'm just giving my gut feeling from having talked to all these people. Talking to them, it doesn't seem that the problem is they're sitting there going, well, I really don't want a Tamika here. The problem seems to be they read through hundreds of resumes very fast, and they try and form an impression of the person from the resume. And subconsciously, if you see the name Tamika, that's going to bleed into your overall impression. It's going to cue all the negative stereotypes you may have implicitly from television or many other sources of African Americans. And I think it's that they find hard to fight and challenge. And a second thing that speaks to, I think, the need for better implementation beyond just goals is that we had, in our data, we had some employers listing themselves as equal opportunity employers. And that was actually a significant fraction, not all, but a significant fraction. And we found that there was no difference at all between those who had actively listed being an equal opportunity employer and those who hadn't, which suggested to me that alone, now, who knows why they're doing it? Perhaps it's just a cosmetic thing.
It's a meaning. I mean, it's a phrase without meaning.
It's a phrase without meaning. And I guess to me that says it's not just about getting these goals on paper. It's what Preston was saying, the second part, which is finding more proactive ways to convert these goals into actions. I thought the analogy he made was fabulous, which is if a company has a goal of 10, 20% sales growth and they see they're falling short of that, there's a lot of resources harnessed to make that goal happen and figure out why it's not happening. I think the problem with the goal of getting more diversity is that it is kind of a passive goal. It's very rare that you see a lot of energy and resources being mustered to see how are we accomplishing this goal, what's the barrier, and what's going on.
Well, Preston, that's what you're saying. Good intentions just aren't cutting it.
That's right. And as with any business goal, there are rewards for achieving the goal. And when the goal is not achieved, we know who did what, who did not do what they were supposed to do on time. And I believe that the same thing needs to happen in this area. I think that if I were a human resource person and I am looking at resumes and I have a goal to hire X number of minorities, I would be looking for Tamika. Mm. Okay? I mean, I would have Tamika and Yashika and Latondra and everybody else because that's clear who they are. I'm not taking any chances there. So I'm going to find them first. I'm going to bring them in, and they're going to have to prove to me that they can't do the job if I want to hire them. I would not dismiss them, particularly if they had qualifications that we want. But I think the study shows that qualifications does not mean a thing here.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. First to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and Chris is on the line. Hi, Chris.
How you doing?
Fine. Thanks for calling.
Oh, appreciate listening to the program. I'm off today because of Dr. King's holiday and our birthday, and I think it's appropriate to have this show on this day. Listen, in my profession, I'm exposed to a lot of middle-sized and small business owners, and I'm white, and a good number of those people are as well. And what we've found in having this conversation about hiring is that there is, especially here in the South, and especially, I'm not sure, more so in the other parts of the country, but in Louisiana, a lot of liability associated with hiring African-American individuals. And the liability is if you hire a white person, if a white business owner hires a white person, that person doesn't work out. And, you know, believe me, turnover in many industries is, upwards of 50%, upwards of 80% if it's a sales-associated job, regardless of race. If that person doesn't work out and they're white, you can fire them, and they have no recourse. And that's a wonderful business proposition. If you hire an African-American individual and they don't work out, well, it gets a little bit more tricky, and it becomes it has become a disincentive to hire those people, because you have a situation where if you let them go, they can go and find an attorney, and that attorney can sue you or bring a federal lawsuit against your business. And if you're a small business owner, you can't afford to take that risk.
And so, just hang on a sec. I want to let Preston in on this, because Preston, I'm interested in your perspective of what he's describing.
Chris, has it been your experience that those people actually have had suits filed against them successfully? Your friends, the people that you know.
Well, they try to avoid that situation. That's the point of my art. That's the point of my. I guess that's my point. You know, they.
I want to know if it's a belief or it's a reality.
It is a belief, and I think it derives from anecdotal reality. And I think that that is the heart of the issue. If we can get past that anecdote, you know, perhaps at some point in time, one person that they knew was sued, and so what happens, and the reason why this study shows the results it shows, I think, is because a lot of medium-sized and small business owners take pains to screen out those people with black-sounding names. They do it on purpose to avoid the potential of a lawsuit or what they believe would be coming if that person happened to not work out.
Preston.
Yeah, I think, Chris, that might be not as much reality. I've been African-American all my life. I'm 59 and a half years old. I don't know anyone that has successfully filed a suit against and succeeded against a small business. I vaguely know of people who have been part of a class in suits against major corporations. I don't think it's as widespread as you and your friends really think it is. But I think you're right. That's something that we have to overcome, the belief that they're going to be subjected to a lawsuit. When those lawsuits are successful, it is cases where discrimination was clear. When you take a case to the EEOC, you have to have a very good case, and it's a long, drawn-out process. Now, I know many people who have been discriminated against, and I know many of them who have been frustrated by the EEOC and have not been able to find an attorney willing to take on a case like that, because in the year 2003, it's a lot harder than it was in 1973.
All right, Chris, thank you very much for your call. 1-800-423-8255. Next to Florence, South Carolina, Arthur's calling in. Hi, Arthur.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
I am going to be very brief. I just was thinking about four possible things that we might be able to do. One is we need to stop spending money with those types of businesses. Two is we need to give more money to qualified minorities to start their own business and therefore create their own jobs. Three is we need to take away any government contracts that these businesses have, punish them that way. And in the state government arena, we need to fire those state government employers who are found to have discriminated. The EEOC thing, that only applies to 15 employees got to have that before they get in there. And generally, if they give you a notice of right to sue, they're not going to do it themselves. You have to get your own lawyer. That's a generally class action. So I'll get off the phone and thank you and have a nice day.
Thank you for your call, Arthur. Sendel, it seems to me, though, that what you found in your study is not the sort of thing that you can necessarily prove. If Arthur's saying, pick that business that's not hiring the African Americans, right, how do you prove it at the level that of the job application?
Right. I think that there's this view of race, which is this kind of, it's active, some guy's discriminating, that sort of was very prevalent when Dr. King was fighting against discrimination, which is prejudice that's out and outright prejudice. I think the type of prejudice we're finding is kind of very pervasive and very low level and underneath. I would say that if you met any of the human resource managers who happen to be part of our study, almost all of them would be good people who would have good intentions, who would be actively trying to do it. It's so pervasive, but yet so underneath the surface of it, almost subconscious at some level, that I think it's not this kind of, there are a few guys out there who are, you know, actively trying to discriminate against some groups. And I think that's what makes it so much more tricky now than 30 or 40 years ago. The action becomes much more, the problem becomes much more subtle, and the choices become much more difficult.
But I think that's why companies really need to be careful, because Tamika can submit a resume and turn around and submit one by changing the name to Emily. And I think this can be tested, and it can be identified who is actually doing the discrimination. You can have one resume, as you did, Sendel, and send it out with different names. I'm going to send one out as, of course, Preston Edwards sounds like a white name anyway, but I could send it out as Ahmad, and look at whether or not I get responses back. And the EEOC, attorneys, civil rights organizations can do the same kind of test to identify those companies that are discriminating. And that is, use your same methodology and to come back with concrete proof that the only reason Tamika was rejected was because of Tamika's race.
Would it work that way, Sandal?
Well, I mean, I'd go one step further. If a company were interested in something much less controversial, if a company were interested in evaluating its own diversity policy, this would be very easy for a very large company to undertake, right? To give their own human resource managers in the pool of resumes they get, add some with some variation, and see if the kind of training they're doing in-house, the kind of policies they're undertaking to add diversity is working.
Well, yeah, there's software that employers use to process their resumes. Now, when I send my resume in, I'm going to get a confirmation that you received my resume, okay? And we can use that as proof that you got, now you got my resume,
mm-hmm.
okay? But then when I send it in again, I know you got it when I sent it in as Emily.
Let's go back to the calls if we can. Our number is 1-800-423-TALK. Next to Nashville, Tennessee, and Shay's calling in. Hi, Shay.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Well, I got a question and a comment, and then I'll take my answer off the air because I'm on the road here. But my comment is, it seems to me like the racial policies in this country are working in two different directions. It seems that everybody says they want to integrate into society, they want to be a part of society. I mean, even our money says e pluribus unum, out of many one. But at the same time, they try to set themselves apart from society with the quota systems, with the affirmative action, and it seems to me like they're asking for the special treatment, but then again they say we don't want the special treatment. Now, how can our society handle something like that working in two different directions, two possibilities? I mean, everybody says we want to integrate, we want to be a part of society, but then again they say, well, we want the quotas, we want the affirmative action.
Okay, Shay, let me put that to Preston. I mean, it's the argument of, if you're going to be colorblind, be colorblind. If you're not going to be colorblind, go with affirmative action. But do the two work together or against each other?
Well, being colorblind is not working. We see that. We see that they're not, the society is not colorblind, that those with the power are basically using that against us. So we want to be part of society, but when we see we're not, we realize that extra steps are needed and required. Because, again, in 2003, it is not working.
So you're saying to
you
Shay,
can't leave it up to people to make these things happen. You have to give them a goal to work toward. And if they're not given a goal to work toward, if you're not looking at progress, this is the way you look at progress. Progress is getting from point A to point B, improving. You have to measure improvement. Every business endeavor is measured in terms of improvement. So how do you do that? You then give people incentives, okay? The incentives are not working, okay? Therefore, you have to watch it very, very closely. Now, we'll have a colorblind society when we no longer have problems like this. But as long as we have problems like this, we have to look at what's happening. Now, this study begins with the sentence. I got a copy of the study and really haven't had a chance to digest all of it, but it begins with this sentence. Every measure of economic success reveals significant racial inequality in the U.S. labor market. That's every measure of economic success. And it goes on to say, compared to whites, African Americans are more than twice as likely to be unemployed. Why is that? If we cannot allow that to continue. And when employed, they earn 25% less than their white counterparts. Why is that? We have to solve these problems. This is race. This is discrimination. This is evidence that it is alive and well in our society. And no, we can't have a colorblind society if these things are allowed to continue.
Okay. We're going back to the calls now. And next is Diane, who's calling in from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I love your show.
Thank you.
And this is a great discussion. I did have an experience with a major corporation, and it was out-and-out discrimination, very blatant. And
Diane, did you apply for a job and not get it? What happened with you?
No, I was on the job and experienced incredible racial slurs, invitations to participate in jungle fever, just things that I could not believe would happen within the past 10 years. Even with documentation and other employees supporting what I had to say, it was darn near impossible to find an attorney. Finding an attorney was extremely difficult. So the gentleman who called earlier and said there's anecdotal evidence that lawsuits, you know, if you hire African-Americans, if you hire people of color, right, you're going to have an abundance of lawsuits. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Why did the lawyers say they didn't want the case, Diane?
Because it's much, much harder to prove discrimination now. The laws are simply not what they used to be. It is extremely difficult to prove. And even with my case, it ended up being something that we came to an agreement about, because it could have dragged on, because of the way the laws are, it could have dragged on forever.
Right.
And your previous caller who says, you know, why don't we leave it up to people? When we left it up to people, we had Jim Crow. That was that's what people decided was the solution to the problem. So we can't overlook history and pretend that it's going to correct itself without affirmative action. We had 400 years of discrimination. Let's give affirmative action 400 years and see what happens. And the other thing that I wanted to say, I'm sorry, I'm speaking very quickly because I know I have a limited amount of time, is that every time one of these studies comes out, we hear that it's a wake-up call. It's not a wake. It shouldn't be a wake-up call to anybody except for maybe Rip Van Winkle or somebody. Every time one of these studies comes on prime time or some show, everyone is so amazed and so shocked, except for African Americans.
Diane, thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome.
We're going to continue the conversation on hiring and race in America 2003. Our number is 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And 5,000 job applications went out, and the results studied by MIT and the University of Chicago when the human resource managers had their look at them was that showed a favoring of those with white-sounding names 50-70% over those with African-American-sounding names. We're joined on the line now by Dee Bond. She's a human resources manager for Gyrodata Incorporated in Houston, Texas. That's a high-tech company for the energy industry. Dee, thanks for being with us.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. What do you think about the results of this study? Does it expose a sort of subconscious bias at the human resources department?
Well, yeah, it does. And the thing is, you have to realize it's subconscious. No one is consciously discriminating. HR individuals are way too busy to consciously discriminate against individuals. We get 1,000 resumes per each position we have open. And, yeah, in your head, you're going to probably put the Shaquitas, Tamikas, and all of those to the side. And you know in your head that those are black-sounding names. But you're also going to look at the experience the individual has.
Let's just talk about at the name level for a minute. Why do those get put on the no-thank-you pile more readily than the white-sounding names?
Well, it depends on your experience with African-Americans in the workplace. If you work at a small company and you have two African-Americans working for you and they're not pulling their weight, so to speak, are you apt to hire another?
But why doesn't it work in the opposite reverse? If you got a couple of white guys who aren't pulling their weight, then you're out looking for African-Americans or others, no?
Sometimes it does work like that, but you just don't think like that. I mean, when you're in a hiring position, you're going to get a lot of resumes in. And if the Tamikas and the Shamikas have exactly what you're looking for, then you're not going to think twice about the name. However, if there are applicants who are, you might even bring them in for the interview, but what you have to understand is during that interview process, if I'm constantly trying to think of how to pronounce your name or concentrating on your name, I'm not hearing anything you're saying. I'm not concentrating on what skills you could bring to my company because I'm so concerned about your name.
So what's the fix? Change the name?
In some cases, I think we're going to have to do that. Until we become a society that are not that is not based on race, then, yeah, we're going to have to start accommodating. Asian individuals do it all the time. They have their Asian name. They have their work name, their American name. And if my name was Shaniqua Denise and I was applying for a job, I'm going to use S. Denise.
Sendelsa, go ahead.
I think I'd be more pessimistic about just the effect of changing the name alone because actually after this study, I've received lots of several phone calls from many African-Americans named Preston, for example, and they've all recounted the story that they find it very easy to get interviews, but when they go in for the interview, there's a shock on the faces of the interviewers, and they feel they have much lower rates for each interview of success than other people they know who are white, and which kind of links into some other studies that have been out there. And these other studies, it's obviously very hard to send in the resume case. It's easy to make them equivalent, like you had asked.
Right.
But some studies have sent in African Americans and whites, attempting to train them to be interviewing exactly the same, and they've by and large also found moderate size gaps. Now, I don't know, is that African American or different interviewing styles? It's hard to tell, but I think I'd be more pessimistic that somehow if you can just get past this hurdle of the name, that's going to solve all problems. Mm-hmm. I think race is such a salient factor. When someone walks in, race is so powerful in America that you're going to see the person as African-American immediately. And like you said, that's going to set off cues in your mind about what kind of person they are.
So Dee, if you're going to reject somebody because their name's Tamika, what Sentinel's saying is you're sure going to reject them when they walk in the door.
Mm-hmm.
So the name is only an early indicator, but not the only indicator.
True. The name.
Can I say something here?
Sure.
Go ahead, Preston.
One, I think the study proves that no matter how much experience you have, if your name is Tamika, they're not even looking at it. And I think it is conscious. It's conscious because the study proves. I mean, this is 5,000 resumes in two different cities. I think the methodology shows that this is not biased at all. It is an indication that people are discriminating only on the basis of name. No matter what the qualifications are, it doesn't change. It doesn't improve the person's prospects of getting an interview. And I think that to use examples of people not performing in your company is another indication of racism and discrimination. You can't say that no African Americans will ever succeed here because two we have here are not succeeding. The two are not succeeding simply because the company has not put in place the professional development and skills assessment to determine what weaknesses these people have and try to eliminate it. I think that's when companies are building a more diverse workforce, when they build candidates who can succeed on the job, when it's that manager's responsibility to make sure that every person in their department get the necessary training to succeed on their job. That's when affirmative action, that's when a diverse workforce will happen, not just summarily say John Doe just can't do this work.
Dee, before you joined the program, we were talking about goals or quotas or whatever to increase the number of African-American employees. If those goals were set and then checked, would it make a difference in your view?
We had those goals. I mean, affirmative action programs were those goals. And in some cases, those goals didn't work. And it's so easy to simplify it and say, if the manager did this, if the manager did that, what if the manager is doing everything they can? What if what if individuals are given every ample opportunity to succeed on the job and they just can't do it? What we learned from affirmative action programs, and I'm not for or against them, but what we learned from them was that in all cases they do not work. Sometimes we're putting individuals in these positions who cannot succeed because they do not have the necessary skills to do so. And no matter what you teach them, they're not going to get it. So what do you do in that case? I have to meet my quota, so I have to keep this individual. Or do you move on to the next individual who can do that job? We have a company to run.
Let me pick up on something you said earlier, Dee, which is just that human resource managers are so very busy. And you are reading through, like you said, hundreds of resumes. And I think while you're talking about some of the conscious barriers to wanting African Americans, you had highlighted one of the biggest barriers there is before, which is, I think, discrimination. I see myself doing it all the time, to be perfectly frank. It's very difficult to unroot a subconscious thing. You know, there are many analogies like this. It's not so unreasonable that it's hard for us to control ourselves. Let me give an example. Whenever I'm hungry or tired, I always get into a fight with my wife. At the time, it doesn't seem like it's because I'm hungry or I'm tired. But much later, I think back and say, oh, I was hungry. That's why I was so irritable. And these kind of influences on our behavior are very difficult to control. And if you're reading through 100 resumes, you're going to form a quick image of the person really quickly. And Tamika enters that image very quickly. And that's hard to fight. And I would say it's not, like you said, the goals are there. But I think what we're missing, and this is a little bit what Preston was getting at in his earlier comments, what we're missing is just a way of training and a way of undoing some of these effects. I've learned over time when I'm hungry to say, okay, maybe I am being irritable, even though it doesn't seem like I am. And maybe we can start to learn that, okay, well, if it's a Tamika, maybe I should pause for a second because I know that I myself might have let something slide in. So I'll pay a little bit more attention to that resume than I otherwise might have. Now, these seem like small fixes, but given how many resumes people are dealing with, these kind of small fixes that aren't just about quotas, that aren't just about it, may in fact have larger effects in getting people a foot in the door.
They do. I agree.
1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Edward, who's calling in from Baton Rouge. Hi, Edward.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I was calling to make a comment. I'm white, but I converted to Islam about 10 years ago. And when I converted, one of the things everyone told me was, don't change your name, because a lot of Muslims change their name. And they said, you're gonna have a lot more problems getting a job, you being taken seriously with the political activism that I do. And we've actually had articles written in several Muslim magazines saying, telling converts, and this is years ago, telling converts, don't change your name. It's going to make things much more difficult than simply being a Muslim, which is going to already give you problems in this society. And one of the questions I did want to ask also was, they did the study in Chicago and Detroit, and I'm wondering, because I know there's
Chicago
two colors.
Chicago and Boston, actually.
Chicago and Boston. And I'm wondering if they felt that if they had done the same study in New Orleans and Jackson, Mississippi, if they would have gotten the same results or if they had been far worse.
I would have loved to have done the studies. I mean, I can't really speculate out of the sample, but I think if I had had the manpower, really, I think we would have been, both of us were very interested in seeing how it looked across many different areas. And you bring up the Muslim names. In fact, I think that would be very fascinating. It was too bad we had Muslim first names, but not Muslim last names. And it was too bad our study spanned September 11th. So it would have been interesting to see what had happened before and after September 11th. But unfortunately, we didn't have any Muslim last names in the data.
Particularly now with almost sort of government sanction of taking a second look at anyone with a Muslim first name. I mean, you try to wire money apparently to the Middle East now and with the name Muhammad, and someone will ask why.
Right.
Preston, you wanted to get in here.
Yes. Back to the point of reading a lot of resumes. Yep. I think that the decision is made before the resume is read. I think that the evidence here is that African Americans with different levels of experience would receive the same rejections, whereas whites with better qualifications get 30% better acceptance. So when the names pop up with the people who qualify for this job, when Tamika pops up, Tamika's resume is not even read. Tamika's just looked over. I think if Tamika's resume were read, the study would have different results.
So we have been talking on this program about different ways that human resources managers can look at those resumes. But Preston, when you're advising people, are you telling the job applicant that there's something that they could or should be doing which will improve their chances of getting the call, getting the job?
Maybe change the name to Muhammad Ali. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Okay.
Who's going to say no to Shaquille, right?
That's right. That's right. So you know, as Sandel said, I wouldn't change my name. If they reject me on the basis of my name, they're going to reject me when I get in there. They're going to kill my spirit and kill my hopes after a week on the job because they didn't want me there in the beginning. They may hire me because I'm there and they don't want to turn me away because that's clear racism. So they'll hire Preston, but they'll make Preston's life hell. You don't want to work in that environment. You don't want to work in an environment where you have to change your name. You want to work in an environment that is truly nurturing and encouraging. And there are employers out there that are like that. All employers do not discriminate. I've been in this business since 1970. We started off publishing the Black Collegian magazine. Our company is I Am Diversity, and we work with those companies that want a diverse workforce. So if you want to identify those proactive companies that are working to build a diverse workforce, you go to our website, iamdiversity.com. And at iamdiversity.com, you will find those proactive companies that embrace you and welcome you.
Dee, what do you think is the one thing that could or should change at the human resource level?
Well, the one thing that HR individuals are going to have to do is take more time to bring in Black individuals for interviews. Therefore, you'll know exactly what skills they have, because anyone can write anything on a resume. A resume is nothing but a piece of paper. Everybody's going all ballistic over a resume. That's just a piece of paper. That's just getting you in the door. Just what skills on there is what gets you in the door for that interview. It's what you do and what you say in that interview process that puts you in that position.
I think what we're saying is that they're not getting in the door. They're not getting in the door. They're not even given the courtesy of an interview because of the
name. But that's not with all companies. You're lumping all companies with those few who didn't even bring them in the door. That's not all companies.
You're right.
We recently had a position open. We interviewed everybody who sent in a resume, because I received over 300 resumes for one position. However, it didn't matter to us what race you were. We went by what skills you had on that resume. So the key is to take these HR individuals and teach them diversity, because they can't teach something they don't know.
Now, I want to talk about the impact that this had on people. You know, when you don't get a job and when you realize that your children do not have the same quality of life as other children, you know, this is probably the most important reason for the problems in our society, is that discrimination in the African-American community is actually prohibiting African Americans from enjoying a certain standard of living that other people take for granted. That we are not given the opportunity to have the same resources that others have, and that creates problems for our society, big problems.
Preston, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Preston Edwards, Chief Executive Officer of I Am Diversity. Dee Bond, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for asking me.
Dee Bond is Human Resources Manager of Gyrodata in Houston, Texas. And Sendhil Malayanathan, thank you for
thank
your
you.
Time. Sendhil is the author of the study we were discussing. He's also Professor of Economics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. To purchase cassettes and CDs of The Connection, please visit www.theconnection.org or phone 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Cahoots, marketing designers creating impact for corporate and institutional partners, specializing